Hello, everyone. I'm Trent Luce. Welcome to another edition of Roll Route, the program where we gather every day at this time. Well, Susan Bradford, we do it Monday through Friday anyway. And what we do is we continue to gather the information to connect the food producer to the food consumer, joining us once again, uncovering stones that have previously not been touched. Susan Bradford, investigative journalist. Have the stones ever gotten too hot to touch to flip over, Susan?
I think at one time they were, but I think since so much information has come forward that more people are feeling empowered, I think, to overturn stones, and I think there is less retaliation against them, if that makes sense. I think
it does. Yesterday, I was a guest on a radio broadcast with a dear friend, and I'm not saying a negative thing about my dear friend, but I went down a path of a lot of the information that you share with me, and the corruption of the, I'm going to call them the fake Jewish families, like the Rothschilds, behind the banking industry. And I did that because of the vote of so many senators on, well, I'm not leaving the House out of this, but the vote on Monday, well, it was Tuesday, actually, because they celebrated Passover on Monday in the Capitol. Tuesday to 95 million billion with a B dollars around the world. And I went into a lot of the corruption and how the money is being controlled by the banking institutions. And my dear friend who hosts that show, we talked afterwards, and she said, I got to tell you, a lot of people have always told me about the corruption in the banking system and how it goes back to these families. And I couldn't get my mind around it, so I ignored it, but I can't ignore it anymore. And we can't ignore it anymore. We need to recognize who's funding what and how they're pulling the strings to get what accomplished that they want to benefit them. And we, the peasants, are going to suffer if we don't turn over the rocks.
This is very true. And I don't know if you're familiar with Ayn Rand, who wrote The Fountainhead. You are.
Who had an affair with a Rothschild and wrote a book.
And One of the disclosures that came out through that relationship was that the Rothschilds wanted to become so powerful that they could crash the entire economy globally, destroy everybody's financial well-being, and still be powerful enough. And I think that their plan was to buy up whatever else they didn't own.
I'm looking for Atlas Shrugged. It's usually must be in one of my cupboards down there. But, you know, everybody reads that book and they're like, oh, my goodness, how did she know in the 50s? I think she was writing the script for the Rothschilds in the 50s about what was going to happen.
She was. And unfortunately, she promoted the attitude of, I guess it was the virtue of selfishness, that you should dispense with morals, values, empathy, only think of yourself, your will to wealth and power. And then that gave rise to this element, I think, within the conservative movement that money is king, that you have to be a rugged individualist, which is good, but that you should pursue your own self-interest at the expense of others. And I think that has not been the American way. You know, we used to be a lawful society. Now it's whatever you can get away with as long as you're making money.
Even if you're elected official.
Especially if you're an elected
official. Better word. Did you see I read the book years ago because, I was speaking in Arizona one day and this guy came up to me and he said, who is John Galt? And I said, I don't know John Galt. So anyway, he said, you are John Galt. You got to get the book. And so he gave me the book and I read the book. But then, Susan, I think it was Johnny Carson. I saw a clip of her on one of the late night talk shows years ago. And I mean, obviously after she was getting up there in age. Oh, my goodness. Her true self was nothing like you perceive it to be by reading the book.
She's a horrid woman, very soulless and anti-God. And
oh, it was ugly.
She was she was a mentor, I think, to Alan Greenspan.
Oh, I did not know that.
So she helped set him in motion. But I thought she was ugly. It wasn't her features necessarily, but there was like a deadness behind the eyes.
Yeah, absolutely. Just
and it was just all about Your right to power and virtues and morals are repugnant, and God is a fantasy, and so whatever can benefit yourself is what you should do.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, we've come to live that, haven't we?
Unfortunately, and the
All right, so
repercussions ideas
you asked
have
me that question, if I knew her, because that was taking us down a path today.
taking us down a path. Okay, I wanted to talk today about the South Sea Company, the bubble of the 1700s. Have you ever heard of the South Sea Company?
I don't think so.
Okay, I think most people haven't. And the reason that this is important is that the events of the 1700s, which our founding fathers were aware of, set us in motion for this criminal banking cartel to then take over our financial industry. So they set the precedence, the structure, the method, for them to do what they did, and that's why I thought it would be valuable to revisit this. So I'd be happy to, to discuss it. So essentially, you're looking at a company that was established by a founder of the Federal Reserve, a founder of the Bank of England. Now, the way the Bank of England and their financial structure was set up is that the British government took loans out from the bank. It was from a private bank, not from its own resources, and that was the Bank of England. The Bank of England was run by private shareholders. It was founded by a Scottish Freemason, and as you know, the Scottish Freemasons, eventually their networks founded the Federal Reserve. They were behind the War of 1812, the Civil War, the World War I, II, Cold War. So these are people who know the value of war in creating debt. So at the time that this before the South Sea bubble had been created, the British government had fallen into debt. It was fighting two simultaneous wars. The reason for that is that they were competing for resources against other empires, and they're trying to establish new colonies. So they took out loans from the Bank of England and were unable to pay their loans. And so there was an issue of management. So they created the South Sea Company as an alternative banking company. It was a joint stock company that was meant to be competition, but it wasn't competition because the Bank of England had essentially created it. So what was discovered is that they were printing money out of thin air. They were loaning money they didn't have with interest. They were making money hand over fist through war, manipulating policy to which then would incur debt from the federal government in order to expand their own markets through which they would profit. And they were collateralizing debt and loans. I hope that's the right word. So essentially, they were using debt, repackaging it, selling it in the marketplace. They had insider knowledge where they were bribing the federal government on the one hand. They were manipulating policy on the other. They knew exactly the moment when debt would be consolidated. They got in, got out, made their profits. Everybody else who was invested in this, and they did promote it as a great vehicle to make money, would lose their shirts. So they were kind of engaging in a lot of the it's like a Ponzi scheme, like along the lines of Bernie Madoff or the junk bond kings or SNL scandals and these numerous
Or the U.S. government
financial things.
today. I
It's like our
mean,
government today, pretty
yeah,
much.
I was going to interrupt you, but I didn't
No,
want
go
to
ahead.
because I thought you were going to. You started by saying you're going to talk about the Bank of England and the 1700s, and in fact, what I heard you describe was United States government 2024.
That's exactly what it is. I picked up a book recently, which is the reason why I looked into this. It's called The Conspiracy of Paper by David Liss, who talked he dramatized this what happened during the South Sea Company. And I thought, what I'm reading about from the 1700s, it's exactly like what's going on today within our the method, the tricks and the deceptions and the fraud and even the networks who are behind it. So they've had centuries of practice, evidently.
Yeah, I mean, every time we think that we're experiencing something new, this world has gotten to be crazy and chaotic. I learned that we do the same thing. We just continue to repeat it with different people. And at the end of the day, it's we, the people, that suffer the consequences. And we have to stand up and be loud and do whatever it takes. Susan Bradford, we have to take a break. That's what we have to take right now. We're back with more Roll Route after this. Right out of the chute today, let's talk about healthy beef. I think all beef is healthy, to be honest. That's not a distinguishing factor. But the tenderness aspect with certified Piedmontese, that's a distinguishing factor. The fact that 100% of the beef is grown in the Great Plains of America, that's a distinguishing factor. And the fact that you want to know where your beef is coming from and to be guaranteed that it's tender is huge. That's why you'll buy it time and time again. Go to the website, cpbeef.com. That is short for Piedmontese, certified Piedmontese. And the reason it's tender is all about the Italian-based Piedmontese genetics that have been in the United States really since the 1970s. Cattlemen in the U.S. have made these cattle perform extremely well. And what that means is they calve easy, they grow well, they stay healthy, and they generate an enjoyable eating experience time in, time out. Get the more information about how you don't need to go to the store. We deliver the tender beef to your door, cpbeef.com. Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce, alongside Susan Bradford, investigative journalist and author. Susan, just so everybody, including me, knows, when you say South Sea, is that like S-E-A, not the letter C?
No, S-E-A.
Okay.
So they were looking at England at the time was looking into expanding markets into South America. That's why they called it South Sea.
Oh, I see. And I'm also, what I've learned, and you've accelerated this learning, you go back to India Trading Company, and you go back to the South, now what I'm learning about South Sea Company, so much of this control of the world is about who is controlling the transfer of the shipping, the actual transportation of the goods to be sold from one country to the other.
That's correct. These were the people, the same people who were behind the transfer of human trafficking, drug trafficking at the time was opium, arms trafficking. They needed munitions and war materials to fight their wars to conquer territories. They were behind moving stuff around the world. So you're absolutely right. These were the people who were the international traders, the sea traders, the maritime forces, and ultimately you can trace them back to the Venetians, and they were extremely ruthless, to the kill. These were the people who moved into East Asia, to China, and then through acquiring markets in those areas, they also acquired knowledge of the occult, which they then brought into these commercial circles. And they learned how to, massacre entire groups of people in order to establish their dominion over territories. And they learned that by genociding people, they could make a fortune in the slave trade. You needed cheap labor. These were the people who trafficked drugs because drugs were useful in not only in generating revenue, but also softening people up, softening nations so they could be conquered. So, but you're absolutely right. These were like the shipping companies. And I think they're responsible for the same, these commercial networks are responsible for a lot of the problems we have today. And the irony of this is that America had all the resources that it needed. Our founding fathers, had admonished us against the foreign intrigues and that we should be self-sufficient and that we didn't need to go gallivanting around the world, in order to find new markets. We had everything we needed within our own territory.
And I myself felt it's not falling prey. It's a true story. We had the resources to be self-sufficient, which we're not and should be, particularly from a food and fuel standpoint, because those resources are abundant. But we have the resources available and only 2% of the world's population. So we, from an economic standpoint, we feed ourselves first, and then we have the ability to feed other people and provide fuel for other people if we just keep that in check and don't allow corruption to ruin the day.
I agree with that. And now I think Biden is trying to push through a multi-billion dollar budget for green energy because we're allegedly running out of oil. But the truth is that, they had mismanaged the Saudi oil wells, the Russian oil wells, and they've established shipping, relationships around the world, whereby we have to pay a fortune to buy one part from India, one part from China, one part from Germany, where we're shipping all these parts around the world when we could have had, our industry within our own country. And without the need for all of this excessive expenditure that has allegedly, created the scarcity that we now have to pay for.
Yeah, in fact, I have it on good authority that the very first oil well, not the first oil well we tapped, but the first oil well that we shut down because it was depleted is in Los Angeles.
Interesting.
And I'm told that oil well is fuller now than it ever was when we were tapping it to begin with, which I believe was in the 60s. Earth continues to regenerate this lubricant that we call crude oil.
Yes, it does. And I think when you know that the agenda is to shutter the economy, to deindustrialize us so that this elite can abscond with all the wealth and power, that we don't have to accept their arguments of scarcity because we do have enough oil here, not only in Los Angeles, but also, in Alaska and other, other states, other territories and
You mean
counties.
Alaska, that big state that we've shut down all oil recovery and exploration in, that
That
one?
very state with
Oh,
Prudhoe
I'll be
Bay
darned.
and others.
Yeah. So what other lessons from yesteryear can we apply to today? Because we need to spend some time on solutions, Susan. We want solutions.
Well, I'm thinking, and this is, I'm not an attorney. I have there are many days when I wish I'd gone to law school instead of journalism, but I'm thinking that if the legitimate government is our confederation of states, and that these criminal elites, have bankrupted our country over and over. They've created corporations to award themselves the assets and the resources of our country. So if they have created these companies, bankrupted them over and over and over again, that basically they are in violation of corporate law. They violated RICO statutes. And couldn't we sue them as corporations on behalf of we the people? And then eventually they would have to be disbanded, and we have our original confederation of states, hopefully still, that they're still legitimate, and we could restart them maybe. It's a thought. Maybe I'm not sure if it's a good one, but
I think it's a good one, except you have that whole situation of the bar, the
yes, that is a
British
problem.
Accreditation Registry, which means you have to find somebody who's an attorney who's willing to take on the establishment of the attorney profession, which there's some great attorneys out there, but I don't know any that have the kahunas to really sit down and say, we're going to do this.
You don't think that common law court would have the authority?
I do, but that's going to take somebody to be diligent in organizing it.
It would be. Yeah. I think we would have to find the right people. I know I am not, unfortunately, not an attorney. Otherwise, I'd love to do it. I guess I would have to, or maybe we both could find the right people to work with this on this.
You know what? Would you mind just walking through? Because I assume there's plenty of people listening that say, what exactly is the common law? The common law grand jury that you're talking about forming to bring about justice for the people in 2 minutes.
Okay, there's public and private law. Common law was created allegedly by the descendants of Christ, or at least the followers of Christ. It refers to your God-given rights. And as a public, as a as, I guess as a I guess would be a private citizen, you have those God-given rights in place that are also reinforced and protected by the Constitution. And so if you can restore Store work within common law as opposed to corporate law. In corporate law, you have no rights, and you're dealing with other entities, even yourself as an entity, as a corporation. And so, as a corporation, you're bound by whatever the corporate government dictates to you, which is my understanding. And so, you don't have any rights. You're essentially, that entity. But within common law, you work within your God-given rights. What is ethical? That you shall not do harm. If you have done harm, there's a liability connected to that. And then there's an obligation to correct what harm you've inflicted.
And you can call a grand jury and ask people to sit on this grand jury. But I've actually read there is a specific parameters for who can and cannot sit on the grand jury. And they're somewhat stringent, which should be the case.
I know that there's such a thing as an equity court that works within the government, and within that court, an attorney cannot appear, like a member of the bar cannot appear. So I don't know if that might be some extension of that.
Yeah, that is part of that, and what I had read in terms of sitting a grand jury to address these issues. But I do sense that people, particularly this week, I think everything changed when there's such a uniform sentiment, whether you are in favor of the Holy Land or not, which I support the Holy Land. I don't support the Mossad that pretends to be the Jews managing the Holy Land. That's a completely different issue. But people are tired of continually ignoring our request to stop spending money in this way.
I agree. And I also wanted to mention something about the Holy Land. I'm going to shut my browser because I'm getting some internet issues.
Well, I'm going to shut something else and
Okay.
very politely shut this segment, and then we'll pick it up with the
Okay.
Holy Land when we get back with the second
That
half.
sounds
Susan
good.
Bradford, Trent Luce, Roll Route. She's an investigative journalist and an author. We'll talk about her books and more when we get back with more after this. Let's talk about certified Piedmontese. As we mentioned before, it's all about the Great Plains cattlemen working together to generate your tender supply of beef. CPBeef.com. Apache sprayers are in the field today as we speak, making sure pests, being weeds or insects, do not control your fields. You want your crop to control your field. You, the farmer, need to control your field. Get more details about the service, the innovation, and reliability of the Apache sprayers from Simpson Farm Enterprises of Hays, Kansas, working with people in Colorado, all the way from Nebraska to Texas. I should say Mexico. SimpsonFarm.com. Call and talk to Smokey. Hey, Smokey, what's new in the world of innovation and technology with Apache sprayers? Welcome back. Roll Route, Trent Luce alongside Susan Bradford, joining us from the East Coast, investigative journalist. And I really do want to dive into this because I know people are conflicted in how can you be opposed to helping Israel? It's the Holy Land. And just much not unlike what we have happening in the United States, the evil entities that currently occupy the White House and too much of the Capitol are taking over and ruining and creating division within our land. And the same thing is happening in Israel, as I see it, as you have this evil entity. I mean, simple things like, Susan, like the government of Israel tried to commit a genocide with the entire
Yes, it's
population
horrible.
and getting people to take every jab known to mankind without asking them if they want it. That was an intended genocide. The Holy Land is in trouble from the people within, not Palestine itself.
That is true. Also understand that we are under the grip of a transnational crime syndicate, and the head of that crime syndicate is Rothschild, and Rothschild created Israel. So Israel is the headquarters and a state that is owned by the International Crime Syndicate. And that doesn't refer to, you know, the Holy Land or the land that is holy or even to its people, but the leadership is corrupt.
People, it kind of like takes them back, because if they are students of the Bible, they know that the Bible says that homosexuality is a sin. And then I ask them, and it's pretty well documented, the most homosexual city in the world in terms of a percentage. I'm assuming you know as well.
And I think also, I think, you know, we spoke about this before, that the Rothschilds acquired this alleged Jesus bloodline, which may or may not exist, but this is purported to exist among these elite circles. So with the Napoleonic Wars in 2000, in 1815, they had tricked the British investors into believing that Napoleon had won the Battle of Waterloo over the Duke of Wellington, when he had not, and that caused the market to crash. When it crashed, they were able to buy up the assets of England, pennies on the dollar, and then acquire a 200-year contractual control of the British monarchy, which ended in 2015. With that contractual control, they allegedly bred themselves into the British monarchy, which was the reputed, or was, I guess, the seat of Christ in England and in Europe. It was the defender of the faith. So the defender of the faith allegedly had a Jesus bloodline. The Rothschilds created, they had Queen Victoria, who was herself a Rothschild, have an affair, allegedly. This was what, the royal historians have said, with a royal who held this bloodline. They then squirreled this individual away, and then continued to infiltrate and subvert all of these royal families throughout Europe. In 2015, when we were looking at this, the rise of the Antichrist or the Messiah, they were proposing to bring forth this a descendant of their royal bloodline. So they essentially wanted a Rothschild to become the new Messiah, their Christ figure, that would allow this family to rule in perpetuity as the Messiah and or the Antichrist ruling from Israel. So I think we have to understand their games, and even this narrative of, oh, Jesus is coming back, that's a political agenda, because they want that person to be the person who controls the world and serves as God's temporal authority. But there are a lot of very corrupt financial interests behind whoever will fill that position.
So much of that, particularly from I'm going to call it a planned mating standpoint, because that's what we do in livestock agriculture, is that we have planned matings to generate a particular outcome. And that sounds really weird when people who are not involved with livestock think that the human population might have been involved with that or still is involved with that. But the truth of the matter is that if you're a student of history, you know that back in the day, it was rare that a young man would meet a young lady and they fall in love and live happily ever after. They
Correct,
were
and well planned.
arranged and almost all the time.
Correct. They wanted to keep the blood and the money within the family. So
Wonder
these
which was
were,
more important to him. Was that the right order, the blood and the money, or was it the money and the blood?
That's true. I think one was a means to the other,
Yeah.
a means to an end.
By the way, the answer to my question, which you didn't understand was even a question, was Tel Aviv. Tel Aviv is the most homosexual city in the world. I find that fascinating, to be honest.
That's interesting. I know that the Rothschild men, for some reason, did not like women, and they tended to marry within their own families, marry their brothers and their cousins, and then have affairs with the help to produce other children. I don't know if the homosexual thing is the fact that they want two men together as strategic partners to acquire more money, and they see the woman as a liability. And they might have the wherewithal to create children through genetic experiments, labs, affairs with the help. But I think maybe that has something to do with it. It's also homosexuality is will essentially break up the family. It's inviting an element in there that could eventually, I guess, tear apart the Christian family unit, the notion of a family unit, with the
Hey,
mother, father, and
we
children.
wouldn't have Hitler if it wasn't for the affairs of the Rothschilds with the help.
That's true. He was a grandson of the Rothschild, nor would we have Mao Zedong or Joseph Stalin, possibly not even Hillary Clinton or Bill Clinton.
Yeah, that Bill Clinton's not a Rothschild though. He's a Churchill, correct?
He's a Churchill. I can't remember which one, if either the Har Pamela Harriman or Churchill was the Rothschild. But he's also an alleged Rothschild.
The one that just kind of comes out of the blue for me there is Mao Zedong. And I continue to hear that Mao Zedong, the Chinese dictator who killed maybe at least 60 million, maybe more, is also from the same bloodlines. That's just fascinating to me.
He is. He was created and propped up by this International Crime Syndicate with help from Yale University, Skull and Bones, Yale University was created by Eli Yale, who was he was a member of the East India Company, one of their merchants. So Yale University was founded with money from the human trafficking and drug trafficking networks, and they in fact created Communist China. And from Communist China, they launched AIG, the largest insurance company in the world. AIG sent its agents around China to map out the continent for commercial conquest. And they also coordinated intelligence during World War I, World War II to know exactly what factories to bomb so they could, take over Europe, eliminate the competition, and install themselves on top. But yes, this was all kind of planned. And Mao Zedong received support from England. And there was also one other point I wanted to make, is that after World War II at Yalta, Churchill, FDR, and Joseph Stalin had all agreed to elevate Communist China to the leader of the New World Order. So that was planned at the end of World War II that that would happen, that outcome would happen.
So you just made me think about something. We know that in today's world, and we do it through, devices such as this I'm holding in my hand, or your credit card, or whatever the case may be, or your internet searches. We have these massive computations of data where everybody's data is available to whoever wants to use it, and it's used against us every single day.
Yes, it is.
And you just gave us the answer to how before digital transactions, before digital communications, how did they get the data to know what buildings to bomb? The insurance companies would have been the perfect venue to have all the data you need. And if you are the insurance company or you infiltrate the insurance company, you're going to access it just like getting inside of a search engine.
That's correct. And where did the insurance companies come from? Originally, these merchants, these sea merchants that we talked about at the very beginning, they needed to insure their products. So they were the ones who established the insurance companies, and then later they applied them for intelligence gathering in order to protect and expand their own markets.
So it's always been about data gathering. It's just whatever tools are available in the era we're in to gather the data.
If you have the information is king. If you have information on your rival, how to undermine them in order to advance yourself. And they always wanted that whatever advantage they could acquire.
And the other thing, Susan, in the last 2 minutes here is that I would be one of those people that just am completely repulsed by what I hear about sex and child trafficking, and there's nothing more important to me than the children and the next generation.
I agree.
And here we learn that this is not new, that drug and sex trafficking, I mean, you can go back to the East India and the slave trade. That was all about human trafficking. We've always been dealing with human trafficking. Back, you can go back all the way to Egypt, and you're going to have talking about human trafficking. That's just been a human nature, unfortunately.
I don't know if it's human nature. I mean, it isn't your human nature, but maybe it's the nature of certain people who have no concern for
I don't know,
humanity.
Susan. You're kind of like a slave. I got you to show up every Thursday. I don't give you anything. I don't even provide food or water or shelter or anything. You're kind of a servant to me.
I have my own volition. I could also choose not to show up.
Oh, you think so, do you? Try not showing up and see what happens. I'm kidding, people. I'm kidding. Susan can show up or not. She can just ghost me if she wants to. All right, this is a good place to take a break. I am not into human trafficking. I'm into relationships and partnership. And she's my partner. We're back with the last segment. Roll around already after this. Well, I'm pretty happy to announce that I'm going to be back at the 2025. Here we are in April talking about the 2025 National Western. 2024 was a tremendous success, and I measure success by the amount of interactions that we can bring between food producers and food consumers. At the National Western, we were able to do that extremely well this past year. We're going to ramp it up and do even more in 2025. So between today and then, I'm going to be talking about why you should plan to attend, whether you want to be an exhibitor or not. There's so many things from the rodeo, so many things happening that I didn't even get to be a part of last year because I was racing off to here and there and really a busy time. Plan to be in Denver at the National Western 2025. The history, the heritage, the essentialness of resource providers will be on display. National Western kickoff 2025, the right way from the National Western. More details about the schedule already posted and the videos that I did from last year at nationalwestern.com. Don't forget Greg Hager. Greg Hager continuing to inspire this nation to stay in boots, his country and Christian roots. Get that done. More details about ordering an album or having him come to your event at greghager.com. We're back with the last segment. Susan Bradford after this. Welcome back, Rural Route, Trent Lewis, alongside Susan Bradford, here on her own free will. Did we accomplish everything with the South Sea Company? Because it seems like I took you down a different rabbit hole.
Okay, so I guess to finish up with that, so in the 1720s, the South Sea Company created this speculative frenzy. They were promoting their assets that profits would be had that couldn't be had. The British government didn't have the money to even pay back the debt, and they were financing the debt. So they created a speculative frenzy that led to a bubble in the 1720s. That led to the financial ruin of many, creating a national financial crisis and the collapse of the SSC. So what happened in place is that the crisis that was created by the founder of the Bank of England, who was William Paterson, he conceived the South Sea Company. They created this bubble that ruined many, they absconded with the wealth, and then by showing a lack of good faith, the South Sea Company, which was its competition, was eliminated. That in turn led to a stronger relationship between the Bank of England and the British government, which became the banker to the British government. The Bank of England is the bank upon which the Federal Reserve was modeled. Really, it's controlled by the same network, Scottish Freemasonry, this National Crime Syndicate. And I think our founders knew exactly what they were dealing with, because this is really a few decades before the American Revolution, which is why that we were the colonies were not only printing our own money, we were resisting a central bank. After World War II, the bank was nationalized. And I think under Trump, we saw that the Federal Reserve was nationalized. What that means is that the Secretary of Treasury, a political appointee, Janet Yellen, former Fed director, that they can prop up the stock market with taxpayer money to create an illusion, on profits that aren't really there. Meanwhile, the money that is given to these companies to prop them up, a lot of it is going to the CEOs, who are in turn not expanding markets. They're not investing in the people. They're not, they're investing really in themselves. And in the 1990s, the British government, which was still controlled by Rothschild, awarded central banks the ability to set interest rates. And what that did is that made the central bankers the most powerful financial actors on the world stage, enabling them to buy up trillions of dollars worth of assets to manage economic cycles. So essentially they can rig economies to devastate everybody else, but then to enrich themselves. So we're looking at the same patterns.
I'm sure that this is not a new pattern either. In fact, you can find it pretty parallel to what happened from 1913 to 1923 and Russia ultimately leading into the Soviet Union. And that is where we're at today. We see property taxes skyrocketing. We see the cost of every single thing, inflation just hitting everybody from insurance to food to whatever the case may be. And it appears as though that is artificially increased at every level, yes, so that we, the consumers, are in a pinch, and we would probably sacrifice and take, let's say, a conservation easement or a welfare check or some other payment for something that we would never have considered until things got really, really bad. And it looks to me like government has always been about creating this artificial inflation and then coming to you with the lollipop saying, hey, just take my lollipop and we'll fix this for you. And once you take the lollipop, you're hooked.
Correct. Then you become a dependent, and in order to keep receiving that paycheck, you have to do what they want. You have to stay in a job maybe that you don't like. And yeah, essentially you become a slave to the government,
The
or
first
to the
place
financial interest anyway.
I truly witnessed this and was not directly a part of it, but was right there while it was happening, was Kelly and I lived on the Rosebud Indian Reservation in South Dakota for 5 years. And the tribe itself had quite a bit of money. And because they had a casino and they're getting revenue into the tribal accounting from the casino. And I saw people who would dole out just enough money to get people by instead of truly sitting down and saying, let's invest in the future. And I quickly recognized that this is how, if I were a cocaine dealer, I'd want to keep people just barely hooked on my drugs so that they didn't kill themselves, but they continued to want to buy drugs. It's the same exact scenario over and over again.
That's exactly correct. And the Indian tribes were created by the federally recognized Indian tribes were created by the Rockefellers to project European social democracy into the US. So the Indian tribes were the model upon which they wanted the rest of the US to emulate. That's exactly
Well,
correct, what you're saying.
I lived it. I felt it. I saw it. I showed up at tribal council meetings every week. By the way, in case I forgot, I was reminded weekly I was a white guy who had moved into the reservation. So I never did forget that part. Wazitu, that's Lakota for white guy, in case you wanted to know, Susan.
Yeah, that's, and I know that the Indians are taught that the whites have betrayed them, even though it wasn't the white people, it was this international banking cartel who's also betrayed the rest of us. But they're taught
And
to hate the white people.
speaking of all of my friends, and if, I didn't experience a lot of hate when I was there. It was just like, you're not us. But speaking of all of my friends in tribal areas all around this country, I now see an escalation of tribal land being awarded back to tribes. Let me restate that. Former tribal land that the Bureau of Land Management maybe was in charge of. And now they're gifting it, 60,000 acres in Wyoming last week, gifted to a local tribe. That's
See,
a, that's a, go
these
ahead.
Indian tribes are corporations. They're set up as corporations, and so they're controlled by the energy companies and by the shadow elite. So by gifting it to the Indian tribe, you're gifting it to that corporation, which is controlled by the National Crime Syndicate.
Spot on. And that's where I was headed with it. And I was just going to go to the step in between because. Even on tribal land, the Indian Tribal Affairs and Indian the Rosebud Sioux Land Trust has to get permission from the Bureau of Land Management and the Department of Interior to do what they want with their own tribal land. So it's like you can tell me you're gifting it to the tribe, but in fact you're gifting something to yourself, pretending that you're benefiting the tribe because you still control the land within the tribal corridors and boundaries.
That's correct, and those government officials whose permission they must solicit, they're usually controlled by private interests too. They're being bribed or influenced, or they are a political appointee who they know the elites know will carry water for a specific agency.
And I did have a lot of discussions with elders who I truly come to respect and appreciate within the tribal government, and because they're not all bad. Norman Wilson was absolutely an amazing individual, and he was a tribal chairman when I moved there. And we would have discussions about the diabetes problem, which is a direct a result of the food they get through their EBT cards. It's high carbs, low protein, and the drug use problem. And I said, Norman, how do we fix this? I mean, Rosebud had an 87% unemployment rate when I moved there. And they were proud of that because Pine Ridge was 91%. As long as we're better than Pine Ridge, we're good. And Norman said something to me that I think everybody needs to understand. He said, Trent, it took us 7 generations to get here. It'll take 7 generations to fix it once we decide. We want to fix it. We haven't decided we want to fix it yet.
I think that that's true. It should be fixable, and make even come down to dismantling the tribes, or at least creating them as they were meant to be. Areas where that land for the Indians to enjoy their own cultures and to have their own sovereignty. But I think the way that tribes are set up now, the Indians, the tribal members are the consumers. So they're the consumers of government, of the goods provided by government contractors. And so you have a lot of special interests who are making money on their dependency. So it's in their interest to kind of cultivate this dependency, to give them all the goods that they could not provide for themselves.
And right along with that, we have the same exact scenario again, paralleling to the United States, where those who have assumed the power do not truly want independence for the members of the tribe because they lose their power. Norman Wilson was
Exactly.
the exception to that rule. He was literally trying to build the ability of the tribal members to sustain themselves.
I don't think the government would ever allow them to truly do that. So I think we may be looking at need to reform the entire system
Yeah,
within any
well,
country as well.
that at the end of the day is always the issue. Susan, you've authored some books. Tell us about the
I
books.
have. I've written a number of books on the deep state for anybody who's interested in the background. I also have a Substack on which you're welcome to. I'd love to have you join me on, where I provide a number of disclosures on the deep state. And you could access both my Substack and my website, which showcases my books on www.susanbradford.org.
Got a big week planned. It's almost the end of April. You know that, right?
I do.
So what's May Day? Are we together on May Day? Is May
I
first?
have to look.
I think it's Wednesday. I have a sense something's going to happen on May Day to live up to
Just
the
a
name.
second.
May Day, May Day. Closing
What do you
thoughts?
see happening then?
I don't know. I don't have that Edgar Casey vision. I just sense something's going to happen on May Day.
Interesting. You could be right, but we'll see.
Your profound bits of wisdom to take us home today.
I wish I did. I think I would like the public to remain optimistic in despite all of the events that are happening around us, because I think what we are enduring is fixable. We just have to gain clarity of the problem and the actors, and I think we will be able to forge practical solutions to this, which may be legal. There may be jurisdictions and areas where we can challenge what is transpiring. But I want the people to remain empowered and not to feel disenfranchised and despondent, because I think once you become despondent, you lose your own sense of empowerment, and that we can fix this. And I am confident that we can.
And I'm going to speak to myself as I close today. We have great conversations every week with Susan Bradford. We come up with fantastic ideas to regain our sovereignty as individual citizens, ultimately as a state, and then a United Nations, or excuse me, a United States of America, not a United Nation. And the difference being that we, the people, have the power, but we can't just have these great discussions. We need to go act
To do
upon
something.
them. It's
You have to
time
act
for
on
action. For Susan
it.
Bradford, I'm
Agreed.
Trent Lewis. Both of us reminding you that all roads do lead to a roll route.